Hey everybody, thanks for listening. My throat's killing me today, so I'm going to keep this brief. This week we've got Lindsay Herkimer-DeVries for you. She's from Dallas, Texas. She's been teaching art foundations and art history at WSU for a few years. But this year she is the coordinator of external affairs, doing PR and student recruitment and stuff like that. She also is an art reviewer for KMUW. She sat down with us to talk about art, teaching art, Wichita State, and gave us a little brief history of herself as well. I hope y'all enjoy. It was a great talk. Thank you so much, Lindsay. Let's get you guys over to that talk.
So yeah, we're at Wichita State University with Lindsay Herkimer-DeVries. Can you go ahead and tell us a little bit about your position here at Wichita State and what your past is with Wichita State?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be part of Midwest Digest. So what I'm currently doing for Wichita State University is I am the coordinator of external affairs, which means that I handle the PR, the student recruitment, and the fundraising for the school. And this is a new job for me because last year and the year before that, I was teaching art history. Mm-hmm. And Jessica and Bernardo and Pat are all former students of mine, for full disclosure.
That's right.
True. It's true. It's true. And Blake's here too. Is he here?
Yeah,
Blake's here.
I guess so.
You're the only non-art student, but you've got some creative juices.
No.
Come on.
Well, he's running this mic, so.
Yeah, it's true. That's juicy.
We all know who's in charge.
Yeah. Cool. Well, were we good students?
Yeah.
we all got A pluses, except Pat. He got an A minus.
I think so.
It's mostly because he's the quiet type. And I know he's smart. It would drive me crazy. He's so smart, and I would want him to talk so much.
Uh-huh. But
he just kept it to himself.
I know, doodling.
Yeah.
He's a doodler.
Remember that dude, that Mexican dude that never talked? And then he finally did, and he said some, like, really cool shit about... Was it...
Yeah.
Some artist that was awesome?
Every once in a while. It's funny because...
No, he's not the only Mexican student.
That was my... that was a 500-level class, and I had avoided at all costs to take those, but Lindsay's so fucking cool that I was like, I gotta take this class from her and hopefully I will pass, which I did.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it was art since 1990s. Mm-hmm. So what's your favorite era in art? Or I don't know.
Sure.
You love the 90s or?
Everybody loves the 90s.
Sure, who doesn't love the 90s? Well, in my art historical research, probably the 70s is the decade that I love. Mm-hmm. Mostly because I love minimalism and conceptualism.
Ew.
I know. it's the stuff that people most often say is rubbish. Things like white canvases or cubes, giant cubes.
What artists from the 70s were you particularly... You know,
I guess what I'm specifically talking about, I mean, the white canvases go back to Robert Rauschenberg in the 50s.
Right.
But the white canvases that I love the most are from Robert Ryman. The cubes, I'm talking about Judd.
Yeah. I saw some of his work.
Or Andre. Yeah. I mean.
I got to see his work after your class.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of these different people you're naming off, not all of them, but there's a lot more. And it was like, oh man, I'm seeing this in real life instead of on a white screen, and it's a totally different feeling. And I felt like such a nerd, because I was with my mom and my dad, and we're at, like, the High Museum of Art.
Mm-hmm. What, in Atlanta?
Yeah. And I just wanted to be like, I learned about that, and I learned about that, and I learned about that, and ooh, this makes me feel tingly, you know, I just want to talk about art.
No, it's great, because, I mean, as an art historian, when you're out in the world, people always question your purpose. of existing, it feels like. But when you're in a museum, you're like, ah, you know, you are like a fish in water. You're like, yes, I know about this. Let me tell you about that. Mm-hmm. And there's sometimes like seeing old friends, you know, for me at least.
Or celebrities like, oh shit, I saw that in a book.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how I feel anyways.
It's a completely different experience. And I have to say, like, I always felt, I feel conflicted teaching art history in that, you know, we're using digital images, which is wonderful, right? We can sort of like collapse the world into the classroom and put it, you know, throw it up on a projector, up on a screen. But that's such a, you know, that's not the same thing. First of all, it's not the same thing as seeing the artwork. Seeing the artwork is a completely different experience. That is seeing art. When we have digital images, we have that medium mediating our experience. So like when I throw up A Starry Night by Vincent van Gogh, it's as big as the projector screen, right? But in real life, it's not much bigger than like an 8 by 11 sheet of paper.
Mm-hmm. Mona Lisa's like that too. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Hannah Scott posted the picture of like, she's like, well, there it is in all its glory. And there's like
a bunch of people.
40, 50 people with their cell phones up trying to take pictures.
Yep.
I sound like an old lady. Their cell phones up, they're taking pictures. I'm not old.
Well, it's just sort of a crazy phenomenon. I mean, I don't know why. I mean, why do people do that?
I don't know. Well, I mean, you just want to prove that you saw it. It's
right, documentation.
Yeah. And I took my film camera.
See, that's cool. I like that. But like the art, whatever, it's the same to me as like if you're at a concert, people like taking terrible cell phone footage.
Yes.
You're never going to watch that. Nobody, you're never going to be like, guys, look, weren't the Killers cool?
And like, the quality's just not there.
And right,
but
exactly.
You're there.
No one wants to see you
forget.
Selfie in front of the Mona Lisa.
Yeah, you got to be in the moment.
Mean anything. You know, everybody's got one. But I don't know.
Yeah, it's like we don't live, but we want evidence of us living. But we don't actually like experience, so we're not. Yeah.
Well, but it's all become social media fodder. So is that what we're going to privilege over being in the moment and experiencing?
Do you ever want to throw up after reading like face? I know Pat doesn't experience this because all he has is Snapchat.
That's all you need in life.
But
Snapchat.
Do you ever feel?
He does the same.
That's his motto. Do you feel like you want to throw up after reading just like
Pat snaps? Yeah.
Unreliable resource after unreliable resource mixed in with weird people's opinions that you kind of just like you want to be acquaintances with these people, not know their real opinion on things. Does anyone feel that way? Sorry.
Well, I kind
of took us off to a little.
No, that's okay. Because now I do the social media for the school, and so now I'm using Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Tumblr, which.
Yeah, Tumblr's
a mistake.
Fuck Tumblr. I'm gonna go ahead and just say
they run our website.
Well, no, we can change that.
Damn it.
Tumblr, you're glitchy as a motherfucker.
The views
well,
of Jessica
the point
Watson
is, it's like you just have to treat it like a website, just like anything else.
Yeah.
You know, like I do not invest that much into it. I know people will, you know, you just can't, it's like going into like a wormhole sometimes.
It is.
You gotta pull yourself out.
Yeah, you do.
You gotta pull yourself out.
I'm not really like that with Instagram or...
Instagram's dope.
I've been on Twitter a little bit more. I mean, I love Instagram, but I don't get into wormholes. I don't Instagram stalk people. Mm-hmm. Like, I find myself not really... Because it's... Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I think every...
Facebook's got like 37 things going on.
I think every artist should have an Instagram. Because I post... post progress shots all the time.
I think that's good.
So
you know whose Instagram I really love is Mike Miller's.
Yeah, he's
that
pretty good.
Today I found.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Like just every it's just.
And he's
it's
on
like,
our. He's
just,
there's an episode
there
of
is.
Him, so that's a little plug.
That's
go
actually
go,
yeah. He
go
went
listen
his
to
new
that
website went out.
After this.
Shout out to Mike Miller.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mike Miller's a genius.
Mad genius.
A man with a tree trunk closet in his house, or in his
farm.
On his,
yep.
So, Lindsay, where are you from?
I'm from Dallas.
Okay, born and raised?
Born, raised till high school, then my family moved to Houston, so I graduated high school in Houston. And from there, I went to UT Austin for my undergraduate work in art history. And then from Austin, I went back to Dallas to study at SMU, where I also have a master's degree in art history. So I called Dallas, Houston, and Austin my Bermuda Triangle of Texas for a while.
How was growing up in Dallas, like, you know, loving art? Like, is there, I mean, I'm sure, I've been to Dallas. I don't know how the art community is. I'm sure it's, you know, pretty good. But was it in high school, like, did you do art in high school?
I did not. I was a jock in high school.
A jock?
What kind of jock? I ran track. I played softball. I played lacrosse for a season.
Was that art, though?
No.
But softball was my main sport that I did in the spring. And I did track all through junior high. I had to, at one point, make a decision between track or softball. And I chose softball.
Decisions.
You have like an arm on you, huh? Sorry.
Yeah, and because I did all that running and I was a sprinter, I was generally the fastest one on the softball team, so I got to steal a lot, which always made me feel like a badass.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what got you into art, though?
Well, I was living in Austin. Well, here's the full disclosure. Is that before UT Austin, I was at Austin Community College, and I was a transfer
student.
ACC, baby.
It's a good school.
Yep, it's high caliber.
It really is.
So I was there, so I was a transfer student into UT, and I was taking art classes. So I took ceramics and I took sculpture, mostly three-dimensional. I took a drawing class and some foundation classes, but in that, you know, as a studio art major, at some point you have to take an art history class. And so I took my Survey 1 class, my, you know, ancient to medieval, and I just felt like I was home. Mm-hmm. I was just like, yes, this is it. This is where I belong. You know, I loved the art. I loved the creativity. I loved the fact that I already had experience with materials, that I could understand the process of the art, perhaps what I felt was more so than perhaps my colleagues. But I also loved that art history was this confluence of science, philosophy, theory, social history, politics, government, money.
So like every aspect of life, pretty much.
Just everything. It just had everything. Everything was in there. Everything was in there, and it was all, you know, by way of art.
Yeah. Did you go to school like on a scholarship for softball, or was there?
No.
Did you just stop playing?
I stopped playing.
And then just went straight into...
Yeah, after I graduated high school, the reason I was a transfer student is because I had to go lose my mind for a year. And
get drunk on 6th Street?
Yeah. You know. It happens.
I was there.
So, I had to blow off some steam. But anyway, made my glorious return to academia and found myself here.
What years were talking, like, college, like when you're...
I graduated high school in 2001.
Okay.
And then I was accepted into UT in 2005, and so I did my junior senior year. Graduated in 2007. Then I took a year off between undergraduate and graduate school, where I was a gallery attendant, where I, you know, worked at the Blanton Museum of Art on UT campus. And I was a security guard, basically.
Awesome. And then Wichita. What's the...
Sure. At UT is where I met my now husband, who's an aerospace engineer.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
Shout out to Chris.
He's cool.
Yep. Badass.
Yeah.
For real. So the short answer is that he got an amazing job here when he graduated with his aerospace degree, and that was in 2008 or 2009. So the economy just tanked, and a lot of college students at that moment were, you know, having their offers pulled, mm-hmm. and his still stood. So, and that was with Spirit here in Wichita. So I told him to take it, and at that point I was in graduate school. So once I finished my coursework, I came up here to join them.
Nice. I kind of want to talk about, I don't want to talk about Austin culture necessarily. I think
it's fine.
We all know it's cool and weird.
I mean,
and cool.
It's cool.
It
and
is
weird,
so cool.
But, you know, there are drawbacks too. I was there long enough to, you know, have the you know, take off my rose-colored glasses.
But I do want you to do, like, a comparison kind of, compare and contrast kind of thing mm-hmm. with Wichita and Austin, mostly focusing on Wichita and mm-hmm. Some bright things about it and things that you see the future it being, or do you want to stick around Wichita?
Life is an adventure.
Right.
I mean, I'm not even saying at the end.
Just for you.
Yeah.
I don't think
that's
just
my quote. You can quote me on that. You know, life is an adventure.
Not that you have to necessarily stay here for, you know, you to see where it could go.
Right. But. Well, here's my comparison between Austin and Wichita. When I moved here with two art history degrees, I did not know what I was going to find. I did not know what the hell I was going to do. I had very little information about Wichita, before moving here. Much like, I mean, in Texas is the same way. People, you know, would ask me, dumb questions, like if I would ride a horse to work or to school, you know. So, yeah.
Did you say yes all the time?
I'm just like, yeah, don't you?
Do you have a gun on you? Yeah. Did you have a gun on you at all times?
Always.
Wild West.
So all I had was really stereotypes to work with. Anyway, that being said, what I found when I arrived here was this amazing, robust community of artists living and working and producing. I didn't know what to expect, and so I was very pleasantly surprised. And I think it's the same is true for Austin. Austin has a very lively arts community. And they are incredibly talented people there and here that are producing high caliber work and just keeping a robust, like, local scene alive. And it all rests on their shoulders.
Mm-hmm. What about other cultures? Other cultural things in Wichita? Do you see that we have besides art? I know, I'm curious, like, to see an outsider's perspective on the city.
Sure, so beyond the art scene, like, yeah. Honestly, like, I don't really know that much beyond the art scene.
I know,
like,
isn't
I'm
it
so
crazy?
Involved that it is my work life, it is my social life, you know, it's all the friends that I have.
It's pretty crazy, because I remember when you first got here, and, like, I met you, I don't know if it was at Jody's house that one time, or if
maybe
it was at Bluebird, but I remember I saw you those two times, and then after that, you were just everywhere, so, like, you just kind of just navigated every facet of the art world here in Wichita.
Yeah, so,
like, you were really, really strategic about that?
I was.
That was pretty dope.
I was. Well, you know, so when I got here, you know, I did a lot of online research. I just started Googling, you know, like, art scene, Wichita, and started checking out the galleries and seeing what was around. Like, where is Commerce Street, right? That's kind of a hard one. That's a challenge for people who've even lived here their entire lives to find.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, you know, if I'm going to be here, I'm going to get involved. And so I just started finding people and then going and introducing myself, just saying, hi, I'm Lindsay. Stick my hand out, shake their hand. Say, you know, I have art history experience. Hi, what can I do? I can write, I can read, and I can write. You know, those are my talents. And so I did a lot of research, actually, into the art scene, because most of all, I was trying to figure out how I would fit in, or what could I contribute. And I saw artists working, producing, having shows. I saw galleries, and, you know, doing Final Fridays, new shows every month, which is an incredible turnover. But what I didn't see was criticism. I didn't see any art criticism. I saw art journalism. I saw stories that would tell you, this exhibition is, you know, happening here. It has X, Y, and Z come by, you know, these dates or when it's open. But I didn't see a critical voice.
Dun, dun, dun. So that leads into KMUW.
Right.
Tell us about that.
Sure. So this was still within the first year of my being here. I found Naked City when that was still a thing.
Rest in peace.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, all magazines that have come through.
It was a magazine, and then the first, I think I moved here, like, in July, and I think in September is when they opened their gallery space.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I had to find Carrie Fawless, and I did not know who she was. So I didn't know who Carrie Fawless was. And so I had to go introduce myself, try to find her at an art opening. It was Jody Leitner. Actually, it was the same night I met Jody Leitner. I introduced myself to like three different women, just guessing. Hi, are you Carrie? Nope. Oh, okay, sorry.
No, I'm Jody. Shout out to Jody Leitner.
Shout out to Jody Leitner, because I met her that night, and she was my first friend in Wichita. So I found Carrie, and I'll get to that in a second, but detour real quick. I saw Jody Leitner's work. I was immediately...
She's dope.
I immediately saw somebody that had skill, was thinking, her art was really on point.
That's a good one to, like, a first impression of Wichita's art.
Yep.
Wichita's got some talent, man.
It does. And so then I introduced myself to Jody, and we just had a conversation. I just asked her about her work, and we talked, and I like to think that she was taken with me as I was asking, I think, poignant questions and was knowledgeable. And from there, we started having coffee every once in a while. And so she really helped me start to get involved. And also, she was my first friend, so that helped.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, it does.
And I mean, she couldn't have been, like, a nicer person, of course. She's lovely. And doing killer things in Montana.
Yeah, she's still rocking Montana.
She is. She is. So that being said, I found my way to Carrie. I asked if I could write for her. Of course, she said yes. As most things are around here, you do those things for free. So,
boo.
But it is the way it is. Most art. I mean, Naked City was free content. F5, also free. It's free, but
free to read.
Free to read.
Yeah.
They don't pay their writers.
Right. Yeah.
It's a hard thing to do. Mm-hmm. It's a hard thing to do. Having a paper publication is a hard thing to keep afloat. Anyway, that being said, to KMUW, I proposed a series of art interviews and reviews that I called What's Good? Oh, so bad.
What's good?
What's good? What's good?
Yeah.
I only did maybe like three submissions on it before everything kind of fell off. But I did an interview with Trish Higgins. She's somebody that through my research I found that was seminal in this community, that she once had a space. I wasn't here to see that, but I'm sure it was awesome. It seemed like a proper contemporary gallery, white walls, concrete floors, contemporary art. So she was somebody that I was interested in talking to and getting to know. So the whole reason I started that interviews and reviews series was that was my vehicle to go out and meet people. That gave me my purpose of going out and doing this.
That's pretty smart.
So,
you have to put yourself out there or else no one's...
Yeah, I just invented an excuse
and
then did it.
Which
sort
is...
Sort of like this.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's just like, hey, so by the way, we're here. cold calls.
It's been like a couple of months. It's been like 3 months, but it's... This whole podcast just keeps going and going and going, snowballing, just like anything you put your heart into.
And it's a good idea because deep down, everyone wants to talk about themselves.
That's why I'm here.
And you're knocking out.
And then you're going to go criticize yourself.
Oh, well, I mean,
self-loathing.
You have to imagine that after somebody does a podcast with you guys, they go and they listen to it.
You have to listen to it twice.
Okay.
If not... three times, because the first time you're listening to yourself and you're just like, you're like, oh, why did I say that? I shouldn't have said that. That was weird how I said that. What did I say? And then the second time you listen to it, it's like, oh, and then you enjoy the entire conversation. The third time you for sure will. So you have to give it two tries.
Yeah.
Just with a lot of things in life. Restaurants. I like to give them two tries.
Two tries. Two try policy on
artists,
that.
Artists. I like to give them two tries.
Yep.
No, just one.
Just one. One and done.
Well, I wanted to kind of talk about the Instagram, putting your artwork on Instagram.
Sure.
And do you think that's dangerous? Does it affect, does it, I don't know. There's been people who steal.
What?
Shut up, you all know. There are people that steal and claim artwork as their own.
Of course.
And then there was the discussion of like watermarks. I don't know. And then
yeah,
Bernardo
sure.
thinks that they ruin a painting.
Mm-hmm. I think they do.
Yeah, do you think they ruin a painting?
Signatures. Actually, Levente said they ruin it, and he kind of brainwashed me into thinking that.
I know.
So.
Our mentors always do.
But I'd never sign my paintings. Do you, Pat?
Yeah.
Ruined it. It's ruined.
Do you sign yours on the back or on the side?
On the back.
On the back. Yeah. I think that's fine. No matter what, if you're going to put a watermark on it, it's going to, you know, shift the integrity of the image, so to say. Should you be scared? Is it dangerous? No, it's not dangerous. That's nonsense. I had this conversation one time with one of my friends, and she's an actress, and we were talking about creating artwork versus being an actress in terms of vulnerability. And as an actress, she felt like when she's on stage, she's just vulnerable, just this opening up of your chest, and you are just completely vulnerable in front of all, in front of all of these people. Maybe you can attest to that being a performer yourself, Jessica. Mm-hmm. For artists, I feel like they are in their studio, they make what they make, and then they have to, quote unquote, you know, put it out there, right, in whatever form that is, whether that's Instagram, website, you know, exhibition. And then once that object is out there, that's a free-for-all.
I know.
That's a free-for-all.
Sucks.
And that's where the vulnerability comes in. And so, yeah, you know, you're putting work out there. You're putting creative work out there. People will take it as they will or won't. Some artists try to control how their artwork is interpreted, and that's from an art historical point of view or an art criticism point of view. But there's no controlling it. There's no controlling what people will do with
can't
it.
Release.
Nope.
Do you
can't
like,
do it.
Do you like when an artist tries to control what people think about their work?
I think some are just more obsessive than others.
Yeah.
They try to craft the narrative of themselves and how they want to be recorded in art history, or perhaps how they want to be curated. I think that always ends with contention than failure.
So what do you think of artist statements? Like, do you think they're cool? Do you think they're stupid?
No, I don't think that they're stupid. I think it's important to know an artist's intentionality and where they're coming from.
Right.
But in art history, you learn that artist intent is not the meaning of the work.
I think artist statements are really good. Especially, you know, going through undergrad and you have to write artist statements, I feel like that's a part of art, is that you should learn how to write about it. And it's like a good skill, because you want to be taken seriously. And, you know, there's been so many times during critique where somebody's like, oh, I don't know, I just paint, you know, I don't know. And it's like, no, what did you paint? You know, like, what did you want to say to the viewer?
Mm-hmm.
And if you, like, write, you know, the meaning or, like, where this came from, I think it just gives more insight. And then it helps you grow as an artist, because then you figure out, oh, okay, like, and it kind of, like, catalogs, like, this is where I was, you know, 2 years ago, if you read your artist statements, this is how I felt. And then 2 years, you know, later,
you're like, man, I was a dumbass.
Well, that, or like, I don't feel like that anymore. Like, and it changes. So it's like, because you don't, like, if you write that down, it's like your journal, kind of. That's how I always thought. It's like,
well,
you know,
you're recording where your mindset was
exactly.
at that point.
And I think it's always a good thing to learn how to do that.
It is.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say that the artist intent isn't the meaning. It's just not the complete meaning.
Right.
Because, like, sometimes people will look at, you know, oh, well, what was Picasso thinking at the time? And then that painting equals X.
Yeah.
And that's
it's
you know,
like
too reductive.
Yeah. Like, on top of what Pat was saying, like, I like artist statements, or reading, like, famous artist statements, because you see what they're thinking, and, like, that kind of, it kind of teaches you how to make art, or at least how to, like, think. Like, it's hard to describe. I don't know.
Well, I think
I don't know.
Well, it's forcing you to have insight into your own work, and the act of writing means that you have to be really specific. What is it that you're saying? What is it that you're talking about? What issues are you confronting with your work?
Yeah,
and it's also like it's a reflection. It's like, I don't know, because there's been so many times where, you know, especially going, you know, meeting people, like artists in school, that just do what they want to do, you know, and then they have to be forced to write about it, and they don't mm-hmm. want to, like, sound stupid. Mm-hmm. So then it makes them take their works more serious because they don't want to come back and be like, well, this is what I did. You know what I mean?
I think mm-hmm. people hate them because an artist always said, they always felt that they had to be deep. And I'm like, no, you don't have to be deep. You just have to believe in what you're saying. Like, it doesn't have to be this deeper meaning about life. It's just it's just something you have to believe in.
Well, I think being authentic is difficult, but I also think being in the context of academia, you do feel the pressure of, oh, I have to say something smart. I have to say something profound. And
Philip Nellis didn't. Shout out to Phil.
Shout out Phil.
Yeah, here's to Phil. Advantage. Also former student.
Shout out
Phil. No,
I just like you that much. Come back.
I understand what you're saying, Bernardo, like you about being deep, and you know, not everyone has that. You know, people just do art just to do art.
Yeah.
You know? But like, especially like in the academia, like in the world of school and stuff, I always think it's a good, you know, I mean, it's just another it's another tool, another mm-hmm. you know, way to, you know, when you get out of school, or you know, if you want to do something else, like, you know how to write about art. If it's not your own art, you can go and write about somebody else's art and then do reviews.
Absolutely.
Can you, like, touch in on that, like the KMEW? I was going to ask
sure.
you, for people who don't, you know, necessarily listen to KMEW, like, do you usually do local shows or mm-hmm. you know?
I'm sort of bound by if I'm talking about something, people have to be able to go and see it.
Mm-hmm.
So it does have to be local or perhaps regional, but I haven't really reached out beyond. I did one art review of a Randy Regier and Gail Lerner installation called Titan, and that was at the Salina Arts Center.
Nice.
And
that's a very good art center.
It
they,
really
they have
is.
A lot of cool stuff in Salina.
It really
art.
Is. And I'm a little embarrassed to say that that was, you know, my first time out there. So I actually went back twice, or I went twice. I saw the work at the opening, and then I typically go back. If I go to the opening is always a wonderful social time, but kind of a terrible time to see art. So I always go back. I always go back and spend time.
Did you go back to Christine Yang
Wong Yap?
Yeah.
Sorry, I messed that one up.
Yeah. Stop it. Stop it.
Sorry.
Christine.
Don't do drugs.
Wong Yap. Okay, so I did eat a brownie that my couch surfer gave me, and it's just kicking in.
Oh no. So this is a real professional operation.
Yes. I'm really sorry. I didn't think it was gonna be in much.
I'm sorry.
She left a note, and I guess I should have caught on that they weren't regular brownies.
Oh my God. Usually at Midwest Digest, we're really professional.
I'm sorry.
So
I
you're
need
asking
a snack
me.
Afterwards.
I understand. We all do.
Why are you crying?
It's embarrassing because you called me out on it. I was fine before.
All right.
Don't call me out.
So did you go back to...
I'm sorry, you went back to...
You know, so I have to admit that I was out of town for most of her residency. So hers was the one at Harvester that I probably missed out on the most. I went on vacation for 2 weeks, and the residencies are basically for 2 weeks. So perhaps you could tell me about your, did you, like, were you part of those collaborations?
Well, yeah, we
I mean, it looked
were,
amazing.
Yeah, we,
Jessica.
Yeah, we had our names on it, all three of mm-hmm. us. Blake, I can't remember if I put your name on it, but anyway, I'm sorry. anywho.
Well, I was excited about, like, the zine looked beautiful. Yeah. I would love to see a bigger zine culture.
Yeah, I didn't even know what that word meant. As stupid
Aww,
as that.
That's adorable.
I know, they were like,
this year?
Kristen was like, do you want a zine? I was like, what's a zine? She's like, take a zine. What's a zine? I don't know. And then later on, I heard Robert Bupp's interview, because I wasn't there on that one, and he mentioned a zine. And I was like, oh yeah, I know what that is. I don't know. I'm not very cultured, I feel like, in some ways.
It happens.
I know.
It's okay.
I'm new to the art scene. I'm only 4 years, 5 years, maybe six, 5 years deep.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought I was going to go to art school. Are you kidding me? No way. and somehow I landed.
And yes.
I meant, because I was like, I'm not an, I was theater.
Oh, that explains so much.
Yes, I was theater.
It really
all comes
and now, communications, yes. And then uh-huh. here, because I wanted to be a producer of something, but I didn't really know what that was. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to be a teacher because I already saw that system going down uh-huh. in 2007.
Yeah.
And so I was like, or no, 2008 or 9 is when I stopped. And then I landed over in the communications, Elliot, and then I saw someone's graphic design homework, mm-hmm. and I was like, I want to do that. Mm-hmm. But I can't draw.
If you're in theater, is that a BFA too?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but mine's just in graphic design.
How come we never hung out with those kids?
Like, I don't want to really say why.
Does that ever happen? Well, it's because they sing all the time and they're annoying.
So, have you done like a bad, like a?
Stop.
Have you ever ripped anybody's art up?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like, can you talk about like I don't know what particular show or I don't know if you want
to. I wanted to ask you, like, being that this is like a really tight knit uh-huh. community, and you probably know the artists that you're criticizing. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you do that?
maybe this gets back to my Trish Higgins story when I interviewed her. After the interview, she said, "You're very articulate. Would you like to be on the radio?" And so I said, "Yes." And from there, conversations went to KMEW, where I proposed the art review segment. And my angle was that I'm new, and I don't have any of these social ties or connections or, you know, allegiances or whatever. So I could be an objective point of view, and I was. Now, so now it's just harder. It's just harder because, of course, as I become more and more involved, and you know, now I have friends. Yeah. Thank God. it does become tougher, but I just believe in honestly giving my opinion, and you know, every art critic is just one person's opinion, period. Mm-hmm. And what I hope that what I can offer in my analysis is hopefully a well thought out and reasoned opinion that I just hope will be fodder for discussion. I just want it to be a conversation starter. You know, whether it's, you know, that Lindsay's full of shit and here's why, or she was, you know, spot on and here's why.
Well, art should be.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what it should be. And I think that's what art criticism does for an arts community. I mm-hmm. think there is a level of it that keeps a place honest, and there is a part of it that will hopefully spark dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Is there any other critics that you, like, what other critics do you read or, you know, look at that you respect? Like, could you name a couple that you kind of pull from?
Sure. Jerry Saltz is a famous art critic that is fairly opinionated. His style is more conversational and perhaps a little looser than mine. Coming from an academic background, I probably hold a little closer to that kind of writing and like to put a little bit more distance between myself and the work, and maintain that critical distance that basically academia instills in you. But what I like about Jerry Saltz is that he is part of this New York art scene. He has no qualms about that. He lets you know that he's an insider, that he's been friends with these people forever and ever. And so if I, you know, continue to, you know, live and work here, I imagine that I would have to take on that kind of voice where I will disclose, you know, yes, I've been friends with this person for 10 years. Mm-hmm. Because I think that lends a little bit of context to the voice. You can understand where they're coming from. And he's pretty, you know, unabashed about his opinions. And I appreciate that. It's pretty... it's conversational, and I think it's relatable, and it's open, and it's not heavily academic. And so I think I look to him to sort of balance myself out a little bit, and I appreciate what he's doing. And he's also an art critic that has been banned from Facebook
really?
And social media a couple times. So, you know.
So is that your goal? To...
I don't know if it's my goal, but I do have a healthy skepticism toward authority. And
you should.
And I think everybody should.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody should have a healthy skepticism about authority and authority figures.
They're out to get you.
Big Brother.
There's this documentary, it's called Life Itself, with I don't know if you guys seen it, Roger and Ebert, the guy who has cancer. Yeah.
Didn't he pass away recently?
Yeah. They talked about, being a critic. Mm-hmm. And why should we listen to you? And I know that's not a harsh thing.
It's an honest question.
But why does your opinion matter more than so and so's opinion? Mm-hmm. I bet you battle that quite a bit. Why are they listening to me instead of someone else?
Give us your pitch. As a critic.
I don't know. If that makes sense.
It does, and I think in that documentary, Roger Ebert answered that really eloquently. And I don't recall what it is, because my answer is that I've made this my life's work. Mm-hmm. And that I have studied and read and suffered, under the pressures.
And I do too.
That's really good.
And so I feel like I can bring an informed and educated opinion to the table. I mean, everybody has an opinion. I just feel like I can bring something to the table that hopefully is just worth chewing on.
Yeah. Hmm. That makes sense. And I really I respect critics because, as I, time goes on with art, I want to be that person that will show art and then have, somebody come and critique, especially being out of school. It's always good to have another voice or another opinion.
Definitely.
And especially, that's why, during school, critiques were so, you had to have them. Have to have that person saying, no, that's not right. And then when you're out of school, it's always nice that to have that opinion always, I'm gonna do art because, and see, not for somebody else and make sure that they like it. But, it's kind of comforting that, there's somebody that's, being serious about it and gonna take your art serious and you serious as a, artist. I just had a question. You do fundraising and you're the events coordinator. Mm-hmm.
I'm the external affairs coordinator.
Okay.
So that's pretty broad.
Super stressful job. What are you working on right now?
Sounds you go to a different country and do something.
So this is a new position for the school. So part of what makes this job stressful right now is that I am building everything from the ground up. Just everything that we're doing, it has to be built from the ground up. So what I'm working on is the school just changed its name from the School of Art Design to the School of Art Design and Creative Industries. And that is a new change. And as coordinator of external affairs, it's my job to craft the branding around what creative industries means. So one of the things that I'm working on is new informational materials about the school. So I'm working with a graphic designer and writing copy and discussing or bringing forward all the new changes that the school is doing, increasing its international travel. There's two new formats of classes called quick fires and slow burns, and quick fires are 1-credit-hour classes. That allow us to be a little bit more responsive to projects, or when there's a visiting artist, we can have, or like Wayne White, right? Wayne White is a perfect example.
Shout out to Wayne.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wayne White. Mimi Pond. She's cool.
That.
I like her.
Yeah. Have you read her book?
No.
Girl, you need to. I did. It was amazing.
The one that she just.
I have
Over Easy.
Over Easy, yeah.
Volume 1. Yes.
I gotta finish this other book.
Okay.
One book at a time.
So Wayne White's coming to town. So we created a quick fire class for our students to go and get access to Wayne White in the studio and get class credit for it. So things like that. Also, we're gonna have some students travel to Asuncion, Paraguay. For photography and also for kiln building.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, photography teacher is really kicking ass.
Jennifer Ray is amazing.
She's really, was never a student of hers, but I sat in on the interview with the students.
Oh, sure.
I don't know.
During the hiring process.
During the hiring process. And so I just thought that she was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And it looks like she's put a lot of color into that department.
She has. So she has.
Props to her.
Definitely. And then the slow burn classes are from fall to spring. So Dr. Brittany Lockard, she is going to have a student or have a class create and mount and execute an art exhibition at the Ulrich called Do It. And Do It is a Hans Ulrich Oberst exhibition. He is a hotshot curator. Mm-hmm. You should look him up if you don't know him.
How do you spell that?
Hans H-A-N-S.
Right. It sounds like something long.
Ulrich, like the Ulrich, but said Ulrich, as far as I know.
That's how I used to say it, Ulrich.
It's Ulrich.
I would get corrected.
Yeah. Oberst.
So I don't say it anymore.
O-B-R-I-S-T, and he's the curator at Serpentine Gallery, which is in London. Anyway, what he did is he assembled art instructions from artists. So kind of like Solowit had instructions for his wall drawings. It's basically he collected art instructions from artists and created this manual called Do It. So basically you have this manual, you select the artworks that you want to make, which means they're subject to interpretation. You create the work, the artwork itself, then you go forward and execute the exhibition, right? And curate it as you'd like. So there's flexibility, there, subject to interpretation, there's subjectivity. Anyway, it's brilliant for a number of reasons. So the Do It exhibition has been, executed in various formats around the world, and our school is going to do it. You're
welcome.
That's
so awesome.
Yeah, you're welcome.
That's so great.
Yep, and so like things like that give students like real world experience. Like they're going to work with all the professionals over at the Ulrich,
and it's all because of you and your team. Or just you?
No, this has nothing to do with me.
Oh, I feel like you put all this on. I don't know.
Well, I was certainly part of the conversations to include more professional opportunities for students, because that's something that even when I was in school, I wish I had, because that's stuff that they can put on their CV.
Totally.
I studied art history, and I always really wanted to be a curator, but, I was just trained as an academic, really. And now more and more art schools are starting to blend in or give their students opportunities like that. And so what we're doing is we're not making that extracurricular, like we're building it into our curriculum. So I think that's gonna make us A, really awesome, and B, unlike any other arts education in Kansas.
Booyah.
Yeah, that's like an answer to the age-old question, what can I do with an art degree?
Yeah.
Well, this.
There's a lot of stuff.
Curator.
There's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Prepare.
The art world's a big world, and don't be fooled. There's a lot of money out there. There's a lot of money flying around the art world. So don't let anybody tell you there's no money, there's no money, there's no money. No, there's money.
You just gotta go find it.
It's like a mafia.
Go get it. Go get
system.
It.
I don't
know. You shake the right hand.
Yeah, it's like the equivalent.
Sorry. I was gonna talk to you about your travels, like, mm-hmm. What's your favorite place to go? Especially like museums and, like out of the country, mm-hmm. What's your favorite gallery or museum?
Or museum?
Not in the United States.
Not in the United States?
Why not?
I don't know.
What's your favorite gallery anywhere?
Anywhere?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a tough one. There's so many, of course. Outside of the United States, I've done research in Rio de Janeiro. There is this contemporary art museum in Niterói by Oscar Niemeyer. It is this amazing modernist bit of architecture. It is a round museum. I loved it because of its history and its look, but also because it photographs so beautifully and it holds all of these modernist ideals of utopia, but when you go, you get to see the places where it's kind of falling apart. and you see those slippages. It's the same thing actually with seeing like Frank Lloyd Wright homes or buildings. Mm-hmm. You see these beautiful straight, modernist horizontal lines, and over time you start to see them sag a little bit.
Part of the art.
It's part of the art.
Yeah.
It's part of the history.
I love
of it,
that
at least.
Guy. Right. Did you know that his son invented Lincoln locks?
I did not.
Oh
Shout out to Lincoln Logs.
Franklin.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think it was, I don't even know whose work it was. It sucks, but the brush strokes weren't as crisp as I thought they would be.
Mondrian?
Mondrian.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was what I liked about them.
Yeah.
Like you've seen them. Just the imperfections.
And Andy Warhol, too. I saw a big, giant, old school telephone.
Yeah.
And when I got up closer, it wasn't as perfect as I thought.
Yeah, well, I love those complexities. Yeah, I love that complex. Having that complex reaction where you have to sort of, you know, perhaps balance like opposing thoughts or emotions and hold it all together, hold it all in balance with each other.
Have you seen Richard Estes' paintings up close?
Mm-mm.
Like, you know, they're like photorealistic.
Oh yes, I have. Yeah.
And I like seeing them in person because I like going up to paintings and just watching them fall apart.
Me too.
That shit's tight.
Yeah, it is.
Speaking of white canvases from earlier,
sure.
What do you think of black canvases? Rothko.
Oh yes.
The Menil. No,
the Rothko Chapel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
That thing is awesome.
Yeah.
That's in Texas, right?
It is. It's in Houston.
That's what I thought.
It's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
I think it's a powerful place. I think that if you have any patience with yourself, you will sit down and look at those paintings for a long time. I think that when people see color field paintings, it's easy to say, okay, yeah, red, orange, yellow, check, got it.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's black, check. But you know what? When you look at those Rothko paintings in the chapel,
they breathe.
They breathe, they vibrate,
yeah.
And you know what? They're not black.
Yeah.
They're like deep shades of purple or deep shades of green,
mm-hmm.
You know? And it's only after like kind of like just spending time with them, they very slowly start to reveal themselves to you, and you can see these like different, these different shades that are just ever so, so slightly different. And they really start to, really shimmer.
I was one of the assholes that was like, oh, it's just black. But then I just sat there for like, probably like 15 minutes. And
mm-hmm.
He's one of my favorite artists
mm-hmm.
because of that. When I saw one of his pieces at LACMA,
mm-hmm.
it was vibrating. But it was like reds.
Mm-hmm.
Yellows,
warm tones.
Yeah, and even those, like, it was weird because it like, it made the whole, like the wall it was on, it made it look like the whole museum was shaking.
Yeah.
It was weird.
That's the power of color theory.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just orange. I mean, the color didn't come out of the tube like that. You know, those
yeah,
are very serious decisions.
Yeah. Yeah, I geek out on stuff like that.
Yeah,
so.
Me too.
Yeah,
no, I love it.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. I loved listening.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm a tard when I talk about art.
What artists are you looking at now, like contemporary like artists, like what, I mean, people that are listening, what, you know,
mm-hmm.
list off a couple artists that they should check out that you know, you are following on, like up on? And
well, there's one artist that I'm thinking about currently, and her name is, if I'm gonna say it properly, Ravain Neuenschwander. She she's a Brazilian artist, and so my research is specifically within Rio de Janeiro, kind of like 50s, 60s, 70s, and her work really, I mean, it builds on that history and that legacy. She's like this next generation.
What's her medium?
Whatever she wants it to
really?
Be.
Cool.
Yeah. Whatever she wants it to be. So she's really, I mean, I've seen video work of hers, installation work of hers. I think, you know, art historians will link her to the neo-concrete movement, which was, you know, using the materials around them, humble materials, found materials. But she's certainly her own artist, and she's taking those ideas and pushing them forward. Another artist is Charlene Von Hale. She's a painter. I love her because each of her canvases is its own entity.
Yeah.
Each one is different. Each one speaks a different language. If you were to look at them, you wouldn't necessarily think that they're from the same artist. I love that.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I like that too.
Mm-hmm. So if you go to the Wichita Art Museum and go to the exhibition of the local exhibition of it's called Arts Pure Voice. You might have heard my review on that, which I was harsh in. or maybe considered harsh. I don't know, but
is it the local artist?
Yeah,
show. Yeah,
it is a local artist show
on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. So I think that Kate Van Steenhouse is our local Charlene Von Hale. She's like a Helen Frankenthaler and Charlene Von Hale.
Yeah, I just looked up one of her pieces and it reminded me of Kate.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Mm-hmm. What is your favorite type of medium to critique or to look? I mean, is it anything?
It's anything.
It's anything.
It's anything.
You're never like, oh, no, not another.
No, I think if you're in the art world, saying no is,
so you love
it's
it
not
all.
An option.
Yeah.
You have to be able to hold yourself open to even, you know, what bothers me when people say, no, that's not art, no, that medium isn't art, or I could do that, my kid could do that. Like, what that does is that immediately shuts you down. And the point of art is to hold yourself open, to hold yourself open to those ideas. When I think about minimalism, that's a movement that people easily write off because it's so simple, right? It's just a box, it's just a cube, it's just a white canvas, right? Mm-hmm. But my approach is, just because it's simple doesn't mean that it's easy. There are some very simple questions that we don't know the answers to. Who am I? Why am I here? What is truth?
Yeah, I always think that art is like it's simplifying something complicated. So you take all these, I don't know, like thoughts and theories or whatever, and you just make it, you make it into a piece of art, or, you know, whatever your medium is, and it's like you're making something that's unattainable or unreachable to like the normal people, and you're making it universal.
I mean, I have no problem contemplating. I'll contemplate a cube all day.
What artists nowadays, like, what artists do you hate right now? Or are you just like, ah,
they could do better?
Well, no, I mean,
Patrick Calvillo.
Well, maybe.
Somebody that's, because I remember, oh God, I think it was Royce's class, maybe, and he talked a lot about the, it's a guy, the shark, and the...
Damien Hirst.
Yes. Yeah, Damien Hirst. But we talked a lot about
seems
him.
Seems like everyone hates that guy.
Yeah.
It's cool to hate him.
It's like the Dane Cook of art.
Right.
That's what I feel like. I don't know. But how... You know.
Everyone's nuts over Banksy. Are you nuts over Banksy?
It's hard not to like Banksy.
Yeah, he's cool.
It's hard not to like Banksy.
Like, you don't know who it is.
Even the artists that... I mean, hate's a very strong emotion, right?
Dislike. Yes.
Well, no. It's not just, I'm not shying away from hate, but I'm just saying that, like, if you hate an artist, it's because something is still really connecting with you, right? Or still really resonating with you. So, like, you know, like Damien Hirst, you know, Jeff Koons is another one, is another good one to hate, you know?
People hate Warhol?
Yeah, people hated Warhol. Yeah, I mean, a soup can, how is that art?
Oh, like, yeah, you know, all the modernist
That guy was printing Basquiat. Money.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
people probably hated Picasso, too. I still hate Picasso.
Yeah. Man, my kid can draw that. Say it, Bernardo.
Man, my kid can draw that. Fuck your kid.
I've been liking Bernardo's art lately.
Yeah. His has taken a different turn.
Yeah, it is. It's none of that.
It's deep and dark.
Man. It is dark. Much darker.
Do we need to talk?
Yes.
Hannah's taking a different turn with her art, Hannah Scott.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am loving her illustrations, her drawings. I mean, they're brilliant.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. She's
we're all like budding in our own different ways from since art school.
I like,
since our senior year, I think.
I like Hannah's new direction.
Me too.
It's like
I like the old and the new.
It's
shit.
Like angry. Yeah. She's like pissed off. It's tight. I like it.
Well, it's good. It's got edge and it's beautiful. It's so well executed.
I think Hannah's growing into this, like, Ron used to say, this is who I am, fuck you. And I think Hannah is like the embodiment of that right now. And I think that's really awesome.
I think Hannah invented, or she was like, you know what, my senior year, no fucks given. And I was like, girl, that's going to be our motto for the whole year.
Yeah, and that kick
and so it has.
That kick rocks thing. She got that from me.
Yeah, she did.
And I got that from my brother.
It's funny how sayings can carry.
Yeah. I don't give a fuck. Remember that?
But I want to get back to your question really quick. So I'll be honest and say something that I am tired of seeing. Mm-hmm. Landscape.
Yeah?
Yep.
Damn.
Landscapes.
Landscape. Landscape is tough. There's a lot of landscape here.
Yeah, I know a couple of locals that are still trying to spruce it up.
It's a challenge for me. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's bad or wrong or that I hate it or anything like that, but I'm growing weary of landscape.
Yeah, well, there's only so much.
I think realism in general, I'm kind of, do something with it is my...
Kind of like nail it or just don't do it.
But even if you do, it kind of gets boring. Like Richard Estes and all those dudes, like I like them, but it's like, okay, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Now what?
Yeah.
But then I saw him in person, and it falls apart, and I'm like, it's because I like abstract, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Abstract is more real.
Mm-hmm.
So when can we hear you on KMUW?
You can hear me every other Wednesday during Morning Edition.
Okay.
And sometimes they play me in the evening during All Things Considered.
Oh, nice.
So that's nice.
That's cool.
So there's a little bit of variety, but that's when the new ones come out, is every other Wednesday during Morning Edition.
Okay. And what time is Morning Edition?
Morning Edition is, from 5 in the morning till
early risers.
Till 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is then you get Diane.
Right, at 10.
Yeah.
10 till noon.
Yeah.
And so my segments air at... I think at 5:30, 7:30, 9:30.
Okay, cool.
And of course, they're always online at KMUW.org.
Awesome. Yay. We're going to have to check that out. Well, we're at an hour, and you said that you prepared a little motto, a little statement for us.
I was listening to your podcast and heard that at the end you asked for, a phrase or a quote. And so I have a little book that I keep of quotes that have inspired me or that I think are, pertinent. Anyway, one that's resonating with me is this quote. I don't even remember where I read it, but it's from John Wayne to Barbara Walters, where he said, "Don't let those bastards get you down."
I like it.
That's awesome.
So that's where I'm at right now.
Good.
Don't let those bastards
get you down.
That's great.
Mm-mm. That's such a good...
That's good John Wayne advice,
that is
right?
Good John Wayne advice.
He was a badass.
Marion.
He was.
I didn't really like his voice, though.
And so was Barbara Walters.
Oh, she is very cool. Gilda Radner made fun of her, and I think it hurt her feelings, but then they were cool about it later.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Lindsay.
It's been a great discussion.
This is
awesome. Yeah.
Thank you so much for all your questions.
No problem.
Sorry about Jessica.
Stop.
Just kidding.
We should all stop apologizing for Jessica. Just let her be.
Thank you.
Don't let those bastards get you down,
man. I know. You're a bastard.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, there was it. Hey, thanks, Lindsay, for sitting down with us. It was a pleasure. Thank you, Domestic Drone, for Big Black Gun. Thank you, Kenton Hansen of the Labor Party. I think we're going to be using that space this week again. So anyone who's looking into any of that, you should check them out. It's a great place. We've been really lucky to get to take advantage of. And really, most of all, and finally, thank all of you for listening. Keep listening. Come back next week. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Who cares about those? But we're on Facebook and we got a website, MidwestDigest.ninja. It's kind of pretty these days. You might go check it out. Y'all have a great week.